detail.
Hello, everybody. I'm Henry. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is October 6, 86. And I've got two sponsors. I need two sponsors. And I got the second sponsor when I had 24 years of sobriety. And I started working the steps with that sponsor because I thought that I needed to. And so my message is, I'm not going to talk a lot about the steps or anything, but that no matter how long you're in AA, you can always learn. And I had a few things that were bothering me, and I figured that I needed to work the steps again with this person. And he has 17 years of sobriety. He doesn't have quite as many as I do, but he's a good person. And the other thing is, I don't sponsor anybody. I've been sober 25 years and only had three people ask me to sponsor them. And what that tells me is that there are a lot of smart people in AA. And the reason for that is I tend to be a people pleaser, and I told my three sponsees what they wanted to hear and what instead of what they should hear, and all three of them went out and got drunk. And but I do service work in AA. I'm treasurer for my home group, which is Sunday morning home group. Meets at 9 o'clock at the Madison Senior Center, right by the post office, and it's a real good meeting. And some of the people here go to that meeting. And I help to coordinate some AA activities like the picnics and the New Year's Eve extravaganza. And so I try to do some service work, and I've been a coffee maker at different places for a long time. Anyway, a little bit of background. I am a local person. I was raised in Culpeper and moved to Madison 2 years ago. My wife, that I'm going to mention at the end of the story, she and I got married. We both lived in town in Culpeper, and I had three dogs and two cats, and she had two dogs. So with five dogs, and I had bought some land out here in Madison. We built a house out in Madison. About 2 years ago in March, we started building the house and got it finished. I grew up in a nice home. It wasn't a dysfunctional home. We didn't have a lot of money, but it was, certainly was no problems, anything like that. Now, my mother's side of my family, there's no evidence of alcoholism, but there is some evidence of mental illness, and thankfully that didn't affect me. That's a joke. And on my father's side, my grandfather was an alcoholic, apparently a mean alcoholic. And I had an uncle that was a severe alcoholic that drank several pints every day. And while he was alive, I would go visit him sometimes and cut his grass for him and do little things for him. But he was a daily drinker of quite a large quantity. And my father, I think, was probably a closet alcoholic. He managed to control it, but he did some blackout drinking from time to time. But anyway, my story with alcoholics really starts about the age of six. And I wasn't drinking, but my father had several friends that were alcoholics. And he would take me around to go visit them. And when I say visit, we'd only stay about 5 or 10 minutes. And we'd go around and visit these people. And I didn't know that they made an impression on me, but I think they did. Because later on, when I was starting to get sober, when I was thinking about getting sober, I decided I didn't want to have a wasted life like they had. Because they were old men, although they're probably younger than I am now, but, they were dirty and padded around their pajamas and house coats and had cigarette burns all over their clothes and stuff because they passed out while they were drinking. And I remembered them when I was starting to get sober, and I didn't want to be like that. Anyway, my first encounter with really drinking, I'd had some beers and shots of liquor, when I was a little teenager and stuff like that, but I got drunk the first time when I was 17 years old. And it was at the Culpeper Fireman's Carnival, which is in May every year. And this was in May of 66. And some friends asked me to go drinking with them. And the reason they asked me is because I was big for my age and they wanted me to buy the beer. Now, they gave me money to buy it. But we went to Goins Grocery, which was out on 29 at White Shop Road. And I bought a bunch of beer. I think it was, we didn't get a whole lot. I think it was five of us, and we got five or six six-packs. And one boy had a pint of bourbon. And that night, the guy with the pint of bourbon asked me to trade my six-pack for his pint. And that sounded like a pretty good deal, so I said, yeah. And so in the course of that night, I drank that pint plus two or three other beers. And that's that was a lot of booze for a young virgin alcoholic. And so at the end of that night, I ended up in a field. And I was holding on to an electric fence and urinating on this fence. And let me tell you something, folks. It was a shocking experience. And so my friends gathered me together and took me home and deposited me on my doorstep and rang the doorbell and ran away. And my mother and father opened the door, and I fell in, and I was puking all over the place, in the living room, the hallway, the bathroom, my bedroom. I was really sick. I don't think I'd ever been that sick since. And woke up the next morning, had a terrible hangover. But two or three days later, I couldn't wait to do it all over again because I had gotten some type of release. As bad as I felt from that hangover, I had some type of release that I had never experienced before. You know, my inhibitions just went away. And pretty much from then, it was like the end of my junior year in high school. Pretty much after that, I got drunk every weekend. And my parents were pretty liberal about it because my father had drank a lot when he was young. And I remember that summer, my father said, "This is the ninth night in a row that you've come home drunk." And so that was in May of 66. And in July, 2 months later, we went to the Fireman's Carnival in Fauquier County. And I'd had a pint, and I got a pint, and I drank it between Culpeper and Fauquier. And that's in about 25 minutes. And needless to say, I was pretty drunk by the time we got to the carnival. And my friends wanted to pick up some women, or pick up girls, because they were 16, 17, 18. They wanted to pick up some girls. And here I am stumbling around and acting stupid and everything. So they left me in the parking lot. And the three or four of them, I forget how many it was, went off to meet some girls. Well, another group of boys, I don't know where they were from. They might have been from Fauquier or wherever, were wandering through the parking lot. And oh, by the way, I had a broken arm. My arm was in a cast from here to here. I'd broken the lower bones in my arm. And so I went up to them, and I looked at one of them. I said, "Listen here, boy, I'll bet you $5 I can knock you down with one punch." Now, that's pretty stupid when you're drunk and you can barely stand up and you got a broken arm. So they stomped me good. They knocked me down, and one of them picked up a cinder block and threw it at my head, and I put my broken arm up. And my friends came pretty much at the right time. I'd been stomped a little bit, but they came and chased them off, and they picked me up, and they took me to the hospital in Culpeper. And I don't know why that we didn't go to Warrington, because we were right there, and Warrington has a hospital. But they took me to the hospital in Culpeper where my mother was working. And they brought me in, and I was all drunk and bloody and cussing and stuff like that. And so basically what happened, instead of a cast from here to here, I ended up with one from here to here. And so within a couple of months of drinking, I was already getting in trouble. And my senior year in high school, drinking gave me an identity because I wasn't a very good athlete. I played football for a couple years, and because I had a big rear end, they put me on the defensive line, but I wasn't a very good athlete. And I wasn't a great student I wasn't a bad student, but I was a CB student. You know, there were a lot of people that made straight A's. But I could drink, and I could get stupid. And when you're in high school, that can be pretty cool. And so that's what I did. And it gave me an identity. And also, in my senior year in high school, we were taking a road trip to Shepherd College. And I don't know why we were going to Shepherd College, what the attraction was over there, but we were going to Shepherd College. And we got on Interstate 81, and we had a bunch of, it was four of us. There was a driver and a friend up in the front seat, and me and another boy in the back seat, and we were sitting on some boxes, and we had Rolling Rock beer and Schmitz beer with the wide-mouth chug-a-mug bottle. And so anyway, we were back there, and we came off this exit ramp pretty fast, and I was teetering on those boxes, and I had a Schmitz beer with the wide-mouth chug-a-mug bottle. And this was an old van. You know, today, of course, the doors slide like this. But this van, the doors opened up like that. And so I tilted forward, and I hit that door, and I did a somersault out on Interstate 81. And today, anybody would be squished like a bug. But back then, we're looking at 1967, Interstate 81 wasn't all that busy. So I'm sitting out there on the interstate, and I'm looking at the van going on up the road, and it came to the crest of a hill. And my friend who was back there with me yelled to the driver, he said, "Hey, we lost Henry back there." And so I saw the van just backing up, weaving back. And I'm sitting there in the left-hand lane. And, of course, cars are coming. And they were coming around me and blowing their horn and everything. And I thought, well, I'm probably just better off just to sit here. And so they were coming back. The van came back, pulled off to the side, and I got back in the van and went on my way. And when I got home that night, my mother accused me of being in a fight. And I didn't tell her any different because my elbows were skinned up a little bit from hitting the pavement. And I didn't tell her any different. I thought, you know, it's better for her to think that than to what really happened. After that, I got accepted to the University of Richmond, and I was a bad choice. That was a bad choice for me because that's a Baptist school. I didn't realize that. I ended up getting kicked out of that college at the end of the year. And just for, you know, the drinking and hell raising and all of that stuff. But before that happened, went home one weekend, and I think this was in May, too. May was a rough month for me. And this would have been May 68. And I went back to Richmond for a week, and then I came home, and my parents were really mad at me. And so I went in the Army. And while I was in basic training, I broke my leg jumping off about a 9 or 10-foot little ledge or something that we did in an obstacle course. And it wasn't a bad break. It was more of a bad stress fracture rather than a complete break. But it was at the end of basic training, and everybody else went off in that cycle to their new duty station, whether it was infantry training or clerical typist training or whatever, and they put me in a holdover company. And while I was in that holdover company, I was playing cards with other holdovers, and I amassed, and I got to admit, I cheated those boys playing cards, and I amassed a kitty of about $500, which was a hell of a lot of money in 68. We're talking about October of 68 now. And so we really didn't have much to do with the holdover company. Most of us were injured and stuff. So I went on AWOL for a weekend. And this was at Fort Benning, Georgia. And I took a bus to Columbus, which is just right outside of Fort Benning. And then I flew from Columbus to Atlanta and to Richmond. I just stayed the weekend. They didn't miss me. So the next weekend I went AWOL again. And I stayed gone for 9 days. And they did miss me. And when I got back, they couldn't bust me because I was just an E1. the lowest private, you know. But they fined me a half a month's pay for 2 months, and they said that I was physically able enough. I had to shovel coal. There were coal-fired barracks and buildings, and I had to stay up at night and shovel coal for a couple of weeks. But I finally got out of there, and I went in the Army. You know, I had real good duty stations. I was an enlisted aide in Fort Jackson, South Carolina, and apparently my AWOL history didn't preclude that. I had a real high score on clerical work, you know. I didn't do any fighting. I ended up in a protocol office taking care of visiting dignitaries over in Korea, in Seoul City, South Korea. And during my time in the Army, I had some escapades drinking, but nothing real bad. Things sort of calmed down a bit. And I got out of the Army, and I went to Madison College. And my history of drinking and drugging is this. For the first 5 years, from age 16 to 21, all I did was drink. And then from approximately 22 to 31, I drank and drugged. I started using drugs in college, drinking and drugging. And then from 31 to 37, my last 6 years, all I did was drink. You know, I decided the drugs were too dangerous. So I had a period of drinking and drugging together in there. But I started with alcohol, just alcohol, and I ended with just alcohol. And then in the middle is alcohol and drugs and stuff like that. But I had a lot of problems drinking and drugging in college. I'm not going to go through all of them or anything like that. But my last year at Madison College, that's what it was called then, today is JMU, my last year there, I was in charge of a dormitory because I was a little bit older than everybody and I had that military experience. And one night, me and about four or five others got real drunk and we decided to go streaking. And now, I don't want you ladies to think about that too much, me streaking and all, but you can use your imagination. But anyway, people found out that we were going to do it, and our male dorm was right across from three female dorms. And so by the time we got out there to go streaking, we had about 300 people out there to cheer us, and I put on a ski mask and call myself the Masked Bandit, and we went streaking around the quad, the five of us, and after the first lap, the others had enough sense to go inside, but I decided to do an encore presentation, and I did an extra lap, and they took a picture of me, and going up my steps to my dormitory. And from the back of my head that had the ski mask on it to the bottom of my heels, there was a big picture of me and my big butt, and it made it to the school newspaper. They put it on the front page of the school newspaper and an article about streaking. And that was in the school newspaper. So that's what happened with that. After JMU, I ended up, I went to work at a child care institution in Covington, Virginia called Boys Home. And I was in charge of a cottage of 12 boys ages 14 to 20. And some of them were kind of old, you know, we kept them through high school, but some of them had been on the street for a couple of years, you know, so they were a couple years behind. So that's why but I had a 20-year-old in my cottage. And unfortunately, I don't think I did a very good job. I let those kids run wild. I drank heavily while I was there. I smoked dope while I was there. Some of the kids at the end said they could smell it and couldn't figure out where the smell was coming from. Well, it was coming from me. And, they used to have what they call house mothers. But there was one other couple there And me, being a man, they changed it to house parents. But first they called it house mothers. But anyway, I was there for about 14 months and went back to school and got another degree, and then I started teaching in Culpeper. And this is when my drinking and drugging really took off. And I fell in love with pills, downers, and I often said that a drink is good, but a drink and a pill is better. And 10 drinks and 10 pills are better yet. And I started doing that. And I started smoking dope before I went to school and drinking before I went to school. And luckily, you know, by the grace of God, I just didn't get caught. Somebody asked me why my eyes were always red, and I told them, I said, well, I've just got a case of year-round allergies. And that seemed to be a pretty good thing. And later on, when I had an afternoon planning period, I would go to Duke's Grocery and get a quart of beer and drink it, and then come back and have another class or two. And I just don't know why I didn't get caught. And one day I must have had more than a quart of beer, because when I got back, the next class, I told them to spread all the chairs, the desks out, and I had an Indian leg wrestling contest. And so that wasn't very good. And but people at the school were fired for drinking and drugging and stuff like that. We had one lady, I think she taught art, and they found her one day, her feet sticking out of a large art cabinet, like the Wicked Witch of the West, you know, her feet just sticking out there. And she got fired for that. But luckily, maybe God was saving me for something, or knew that I couldn't get a job doing anything else, so he kept me from getting fired. At age 30, I thought it was time to get married. I thought, if you're 30 years old and you haven't been married, it's time to get married. And I thought that this woman would help save me from alcohol and drugs. And that's the worst reason to get married, you know, hoping that somebody's going to save you and make you a better person and stuff like that. And I pretty much ruined that relationship. I would drink and drug and hide stuff. And I remember one Christmas, we were opening up this big container of Christmas lights and balls and stuff like that. And out came a couple of bottles of pills and a fifth of old granddad 100 proof liquor that I'd stolen. And because I never would buy something that good. And that put a damper on the trimming the Christmas tree. But, I'd put that stuff away in a blackout, and I'd forgotten that it was in there. Got married in 1979, August of 79. The next year, in July and August of 80, I went to work. I had a summer job taking a census, a school census, where we went around to every place and asked them if they had any kids from the ages of 1 to 19, and we were taking a school census. And my district was Jeffersonton, and that's out in the sticks, and there are a lot of big, mean dogs out in Jeffersonton. And I've got 5 dogs now, and I always prided myself on being an animal lover and getting along with dogs. Well, you know, the first day out, I got bit by a 3-pound terrier, and he tore my pants leg. And there were a couple of other situations where I was scared to death. I mean, I was shell-shocked by the time I ended that job. I started drinking on the job and going into people's houses and stealing pills. And if an old person, I'd knock on the door, and if an old person answered the door, an elderly person, I'd say, ma'am, do you think I could, whether they had any kids there or not, didn't matter. I'd say, ma'am, do you think I can use your bathroom? And I had the county car with a county sticker on it, and my little short pants and a clipboard, and I thought I looked official. And some of them let me in because old people got good drugs. You know, they always got sleeping pills or pain pills or something. So I can remember once the biggest score I made was two bottles of Valium, had 100 Valium each. They were 5 milligram, little 5 milligram yellow Valium. They had 100 Valium each. But I can remember this one place I went in, and I was so messed up. I opened the cabinet up and got pills out and started getting them all mixed up and dropping them on the floor and trying to stuff some in my pants and put some back in the bottle and stuff like that. And she starts knocking on the bathroom door saying, asking me what I was doing in there and, you know, why was it taking so long. And I got out of there as fast as I could. And I don't remember if it was that day or not, but there was one day where I hit a tree and I hit two cars in the county car. And I hit a tree trying to make a tight turn. I smashed in the driver's side door trying to make a tight turn around this tree. And when I got it back to the apartment, there was an empty space between two cars. And I tried to pull in and I hit one car. And I backed up and overcorrected and hit the other car. And I was in a county car. And I don't know what happened. I don't remember talking to the owner. So there's one guy that came running out of his apartment. He was mad because I hit his car. It was one of his cars. But my wife handled that stuff. And when I turned that county car in to the motor pool, it had dents everywhere but maybe the roof. And when I turned that car in, I gave the guy the keys, and I said, you know, there are a bunch of bad drivers where I live. They keep hitting this car. And he took the keys. He didn't say a word. And I never heard anything about it, but I did thousands of dollars of damage to that county car. A couple months later, a friend of mine, a drug dealer, I was over at his house and did some cocaine one Saturday. And the next Monday, 2 days later, I decided to stay home from work. I frequently stayed home from work, from teaching. I sent my wife off to work. She was a teacher, too. And stayed home. And as soon as she left the house, I went to 7-Eleven. By now, it's probably about 8 o'clock. And I got 2 quarts of wine. You know, the liquor store wasn't open, so I couldn't go there. I got 2 quarts of wine, and I had about 8 or 9 of those Valium left from the score I'd made in the medicine cabinet when the woman had 200 Valium. And so I drank that half a gallon of wine and took the Valium, and I was really messed up. And I decided to drive over to see if we could do some more coke. Right idea. So I got in the car and went over there, and I don't know how I made it over there. I was in probably halfway blacked out. But he wasn't home. And so I picked up a cinder block, and he had a padlock on the door. I took the cinder block and broke his padlock and went in. And I stole his bong and his pot and some pills and a bottle of liquor. And I went home, and I drank some of the liquor. I smoked the pot. I took some more pills and passed out in the bed. And my wife came home, and I don't remember her coming home from work, but around 6 o'clock, she woke me up, and she said, Henry, you've got some friends here that want to see you. And I went out there, and I was glad to see him. That's, you know, I was excited about it. And so, Henry, did you loan your car to anybody today? And then it dawned on me what I'd done. And I said, no. And I felt a big right hand on my cheek. And they beat me up pretty good. They didn't stomp me like they could have stomped me because my wife was there and it was inside my apartment. But they only probably hit me maybe 4 or 5 times, but they were big, strong men. And a day or two later, and returned his bong to him and told him I was sorry I broke into his house. But our relationship never got better again after that. And later that week, that was on a Monday, and that Wednesday I went to see a reconstructive surgeon about my face. I had some broken bones in my face, and I looked really a mess. I was all yellow and purple and blue and black streaks and everything. And And I went to work that Friday. And there was a cop at the school. He was like the school policeman. I'd grown up with him, and I told him what happened. And, you know, he just said, Henry, you need to get some help. And so a couple weeks later, my wife and I went to an AA meeting in Culpeper, the Friday night meeting. And it was too much religion, and I didn't like holding hands with men. And we were there, and I didn't go back to AA for 6 years. And my drinking continued to get worse and worse. And for me, alcoholism is not just about the drinking. You know, it's about the feelings. It's about lying, sneaking around, hiding bottles. I would do anything I could to protect my addictions. And by this time, I'd given up the pills and the drugs. And I was just, but you know, when I gave up the pills and drugs, my drinking probably tripled. You know, I needed to do it. And I had bottles hidden all over the place. I had them hidden in a wood pile. I had them hidden in a pile of brush. I had one bottle hidden in an outside shed. I had them hidden inside the house, three or four places. And I think my wife loved me, but I destroyed our marriage with my drinking and stuff. And I had a son. He was three. I was upstairs with my wife. We were in bed one night. It was about 1:30 in the morning, and we sort of played a game. The game was that I would drink and hide my bottles, and she'd try to find them. And so that night, I drank in front of her, but I would like to drink with her away or something so I could really drink and not have her fuss at me and so forth. And I really didn't want to hurt her. But my addiction was more powerful than that. So one night about 1:30 in the morning, I thought she was asleep. And I tried to ease out of bed. And she said, where are you going? And I said, I'm going to go do some laundry. This is 1:30 in the morning. So she gave me a few minutes head start. And I went down to the laundry room where I had a bottle hidden in the ductwork. And she came down and caught me chugging that bottle. And she called me every name in the book. And she was pregnant with our second child, which turned out to be a girl. And so I said, all right, I'll go back to AA. So I went back probably a couple days after that. This was in January of 1986. And I went back and I stayed sober about 40 days, and then I started drinking. I stayed sober maybe 30 days and started drinking. And then finally, I was back to drinking every day. And I moved down to the bedroom downstairs. We had a guest room downstairs. It was a bi-level house. It was a nice house on a nice lot over on Alum Springs Road. And I moved downstairs, and I would drink down there when I got off work. Before I went to bed at night, I started drinking a pint before I went to bed at night. And I drank that pint in about 15 or 20 minutes. You know, I was just chugging it down just like a sleeping pill, you know, to knock me out. The only problem was I'd wake up 3 or 4 hours later and have to go to the bathroom and maybe have to get another drink to calm down, and so it wasn't very good. But she'd come down there sometimes and try to get me to go back up to her bed. And I could hear her crying some nights upstairs. And so it was a sad situation. And the last 3 months, the last 3 months, I was drinking probably 2 pints a day. That's a quart a day. For you all that are a little slow on math. And so I was drinking 2 pints a day. And at that point, I'm going to get sober. But what I want to say before I tell how I get sober is the fact that I consider myself a high bottom drunk. Because a lot of people have drank 2 pints a day, a quart a day for many, many years. And I was just drinking that amount for about 3 or 3.5 months. So while I did a lot of drinking and drugging, and I didn't lose a lot of stuff, I consider myself a high bottom drunk. And I consider, like my uncle, a low bottom drunk, because he drank that much for years and years and years, and he never got sober. But one afternoon, I was home from work, and I hadn't been to work for a while. In fact, you know, as a school teacher, I had the summers off. And I had one summer, going sort of backtracking a little bit, I had one summer where I didn't go to school for the first 2 weeks. It took me that long to sober up and get straight and detox, even though I'd been off 9 or 10 weeks that summer. Summertime was a real time for me to drink and drug. And as a teacher, I'd go back and people would say what they did that summer, how they'd taken a trip, how they'd done this or that, and they'd ask me, what did I do and what could I say? Well, I drank and drugged all summer. I couldn't say that, so I'd make something up or, you know, went to my estate in Long Island or something like that. But that afternoon, and I'm not sure which day it is. It could be October 3, 4, 5, or 6. But I celebrate my anniversary October 6 because I know I was sober that day. But that afternoon, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I was in my pajamas out on the carport, and I had a glass of bourbon. And I remember saying, God, let this be my last drink today. I didn't say forever, but just today. I just was tired of drinking. And I don't remember what I did with that glass of bourbon, whether I threw it out on the gravel or whether maybe I finished it. But what I did do after that was to go upstairs and sleep for about 16 hours. And I'd had trouble sleeping at night, like I said, drinking a lot right before I went to bed and waking up and having to drink in the morning. But I just had a very peaceful sleep for about 16 hours. And I woke up and I was a different person. I'd had a spiritual awakening. Now, they talk about having a spiritual awakening after doing the 12 steps, but I had mine before I did any steps except for the first one. I did surrender at that moment when I asked God to let this be my last drink today. That was a surrender. But I woke up and I was a new person. One of the big differences is I had hope. I felt like I could really get sober, where during that 9 months preceding that, I was going to one AA meeting here or there and drinking the rest of the time. I didn't really feel like I could get sober, but I felt like I could get sober. I had hope, and I wanted to be sober. And it was almost like a transformation, and I haven't had a drink since then. And I started going to meetings just about every day. And I started giving people rides to meetings and asking people for rides. I figured... Now, I still had a compulsion to drink that lasted 4 or 5 months. I really wanted to drink, and it usually hit me about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'd go out in the woods behind my house and talk to God and pray and cry a little bit and get over it. And I should have called somebody, but I didn't. But I would call later on, you know, about 6 o'clock or 6:30 and ask somebody if they wanted a ride to a meeting or if they could give me a ride to the meeting. And I had a lot of anger issues my first 5 years of sobriety. I didn't get a sponsor until I'd been sober for 14 months. I never picked up a month chip. I waited until I'd been sober a year because I didn't think I could make it. And I can remember when I was about 10 months sober and I was afraid I was going to take another drink, I was talking to Bill Jay. And he said, Henry, don't take a drink, say a little prayer, and go to a meeting. He said, you'll get better even if you don't want to get better. And I liked that. That all I had to do was just not take that drink, and I would get better eventually. And but I the one phrase that helped me was a day at a time. And that was the one hang-up I had during that 9 months when I was drinking and going to a few meetings. I thought, well, I'm 37 years old. With my luck, I may live another 30 or 40 years. I can't stay sober a day or two at a time. How am I going to stay sober 30 or 40 years? And it finally hit me in a meeting. I didn't have to stay sober for 30 or 40 years, just a day at a time. That's all I had to do. And I stopped feeling sorry for myself. I stopped thinking, well, I'm a big boy. Why can't I drink like other people? And even though I was taking it a day at a time, I made a commitment that I never wanted to drink or drug again. I made that commitment. And, we talk about a day at a time, and I think it has to be a day at a time, especially when you're new in the program. But at some point, you have to make that commitment. I'm just not going to drink again or drug again. I made that commitment to myself. And felt pretty good about it. My wife and I ended up splitting up. When I was 3 months sober, she said we need to see a marriage counselor. When I was 3 years sober, she said we need to separate. And we separated. It's taken me, I'm not a big book thumper. It's taken me a while to get better. I have so many good things in my life today. When I was drinking, especially as a school teacher before I was married and after I was married, I was a solitary drinker. I didn't want to be around anybody. And I can remember when I skipped a lot of parts of my story, but at one point I was living in an apartment, and I realized I didn't have any friends at all. And I was just drinking and drugging by myself. And, today I have friends in AA and outside of AA. like I said, my wife and I built a nice house in Madison, and I've got a wonderful wife today, and she's trying to get me to get my left ear pierced and put an earring in it and have spiked hair and be like Sting. And I told her no, that I'm not the earring type of person or the spiked hair type of person. But aside from that, she's a wonderful woman. And we're planning a trip in June. I've already paid for it. We're going to take an Alaskan cruise and land excursion through Denali National Park and see all the wild animals and stuff. And I've got hobbies and activities today. And, as far as the teaching school and the drinking and the drugs, I got sober the last 20 years of my teaching experience, and I'm sure that if I kept drinking and drugging, it would have caught up with me at some point. I would have been fired. And as Jack Dennis used to say, an old-timer, everything I have today I owe to AA. And it's been a wonderful journey. And I think, and I'm going to stop here in a minute. I've got about 5 minutes, 4 or 5 minutes, but I'm going to stop. Three things I think have helped me to get better. And one is just getting older. I think I'm more mellow now that I'm older. And I think that being married to a good woman has really helped me a lot. And, of course, being retired from teaching. I don't have to listen to the kids anymore. And I've got a couple of students in here, ex-students in here. And but life is really good today. And I guess that's all I've got. Thank you.